Baby, God loves the sinners best because our fire burns bright, bright, bright. Burn with me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And this is Legion Cast episode 12, which is also chapter 12. We should do a bonus episode just to mess it all up.
We should. And we'll that way everyone can question the reality.
And the bonus episode will just be us saying hi.
And that's it. Well, that would be so uninteresting.
Just so we can fuck it up for everybody. No, just kidding.
We can make an interesting podcast about an interesting show.
All right. That is our intro. Now let's jump into our top five highlights for Legion Season 2, Episode 4, Chapter 12. Did you like it?
I did. I liked this episode. I was reading a lot that a lot of people kept calling this like a filler episode, and I didn't.
I knew it.
Yeah. I don't feel that way. I read a lot of that and I thought, "What? I don't see it." And I mean, I really enjoyed it and I really liked it. And I think there was some really great character development and I think it's going to play a part in the rest of the season.
Probably. I know. I mean, I don't even care if it does or not because I knew. I mean, I figured it feels like it could be an aside. And but I just thought it was really beautifully done episode. And it had a little more emotional impact than Legion usually has on me.
Yeah.
I think it might have been my favorite episode. If not, then it was one of my favorites of the whole thing. It was definitely special. And I think even if it doesn't contribute that much to the plot, I'm watching TV because I want to be moved. That's the main reason why, you know?
Right.
Not because I want it. Like, somebody could just, you could go to the Wikipedia page and read what happens in a story, but really what's really impressive to me about great TV is when you feel something. And in this episode, I really felt like, man, that was so good. So I loved it a lot.
I agree. This was probably second for me. And I cannot remember like which episode, like number it was in season one, but it was whenever Sid and David went to the White Room.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah. So yeah. That was awesome.
I really, really loved that. That was a great episode, I thought. And, so that was like one of my favorite, I mean, they're all great for sure, but that was definitely a standout for me. And this one was really emotional for me too. It hit some spots.
What's good about the White Room is Sid has this, you know, ongoing tragedy of not being able to touch anyone. And there's the love story. And so you'd think like on most shows that they would just drag that out forever. But no, they gave them this like, you know, beautiful solution to it. A mutant solution. Right. And it was amazing. And it's so satisfying. And now they went there again this season, you know, right? As soon as he came back, can I kiss you? Well, you better. And then boom, they're right back in that room.
Right. They didn't waste much time. They were right back in that White Room.
I like it because it's unexpected and it's satisfying. And that's not the crux of the story. So they don't need to leave it unresolved. Anyways. Okay. What's your number five?
My number five, and I'm going to go into more in depth, but I just wanted to kind of make a general observation in general about Sid's memory trip. And that was what we got there in the beginning when we saw her in that iceberg with the fake little fire. And I really like how it went through the whole process. You know, she starts like slowly crawling through, and I don't know anything about an igloo or its structure or what you call the darn things, but whatever the little tunnel thing is, as you're entering or exiting.
It's called the birth canal.
Well, in this episode, yeah, it's the birth canal, but it was really cool, you know, how she's crawling through here and it transitions from her crawling through this igloo to her being born. And then we see like the evolution as she grows up, you know, how she goes from being born to, you know, when she's a little girl, where she's wearing her gloves while her mom's working as she's a teenager. And that's kind of where we kind of stop at that point. It's just in her teenage years. But I really like that whole evolution that we get, and we get montage to see those observations. Yeah, that whole montage feel of it, and how, you know, she's crying because she's being held. She's feeling that skin to skin contact with her mom. And she's being born. Her mom tries to touch her in her crib and she's crying out, and her mom backs off, and you can see she's like better she's soothed after realizing she's not going to be touched. So I really like that whole thing when her mom grabs the pillow to comfort her, and you know she uses that to like snuggle with her to comfort her, knowing that she can't be touched.
Yeah,
and
she figured out ways around it really quick.
Yeah,
which was
I
nice.
Thought that was really beautiful. So yeah. I really like that whole montage, and I really like, you know, I know that you watched this show too, but did you recognize Sid's mom?
Yeah, Lily Rabe.
Yeah, Lily Rabe. She's so great in American Horror Story. I love her in that so much. And she was, when I recognized her, it just really kind of escalated the episode for me and brought it to another level, because I really love her acting. And she brought a lot to it in this episode.
I get a feeling that actress probably doesn't want to do things unless she feels they're high quality. I don't know. I could just be projecting, because I think American Horror Story is high quality. And I think Legion is too. And this just kind of puts a little stamp of approval on it, you know? Like, right. Oh, she thought it was good enough.
Or it could be that she's dating, her boyfriend is Hamish Linklater, the guy that plays Clark. It might have something to do with that.
Oh, that might have something
maybe
to do
not.
With it.
I think what you're saying Clark's is really like, true.
Yeah, what's his name? What Linklater?
Hamish.
He's like, come on my show. And she's like, the superhero? No, it's really good. All right.
You say so. No, I think you're right, because it is high quality. I think American Horror Story is really high quality, and this is too, I think, as well.
Yeah, and they're both very stylish and stylized and deliberate in the way they you know, frame each shot and everything like that. So I think they have kind of a similar quality to it. I never thought about that before, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. She was able to do a lot without a lot of speaking words, just the way that she was able with their glances to each other, her and young Sydney, how they would look at each other, and how just the little that she said could say so much, and those sad glances.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wasn't sure I was going to like that they were going like back and forth so much, like we were going to see how they were going to keep looping to Sid's life, you know, starting over and over and over again. And I thought, oh no, I don't know if I'm going to like this, but they did, I think, a really great job, because there was enough subtleties each time that they went back. As David was going back, that there were like new subtleties and some wrinkles that were added that I really liked it. So that's my number five.
You were saying about the womb, and it just reminded me of when I went to Burning Man for the first time. I was part of this camp that we built this dome. It was actually two domes. Big geodesic domes, and they had these tunnels that led to this little smaller dome in the center, and so we called that the womb, and it had all these cushioning, and it was all pink inside, and then we had to make like birth canal, but it was just like foamy stuff, you know, that went out, so you had to crawl through it to get to the womb.
Good thing
funny. Yeah,
thought it wasn't anything organic.
No, it wasn't anything like that. Okay, so my number five is figuring Sid out. And it's not, I'm not going to try to say what we figured out just yet, but just the act of it, because I liked how we just spent a very little bit of time last episode exploring Potonomy. Like, Carrie just figured that out really quick. Mm-hmm. And then with Melanie, it took a little longer. But not much. And Sid is much more complicated and deserves a whole episode. When I watched the episode the first time, I was like, man, this feels like when I'm trying to figure out somebody, you know, it doesn't have to be a woman necessarily, but anybody. Usually
the women that are
it does feel like
though.
A woman though. Yeah. And it's like, God, this is hard. I don't know if I can do it. And it's also kind of like, I feel like David is I feel similar to him when I'm podcasting, trying to figure something out, like he's having a go at it. And then Sid is like one of the listeners writing back, no, you're totally wrong. So try again. But anyways, I kind of love it because, you know, it does feel like a typical, like when your girlfriend's mad at you and you don't know why. And she's like, you just never get me. But also beyond that, we're all different and unique, you know, and even men, like, you need, if you really want to figure somebody out, I don't think it's going to be that easy with anybody. And I really like that. And I do kind of feel like I got a good handle on it after the second time around, but I feel like it would be kind of beautiful if it wasn't very clear, because people aren't puzzles. They're complicated and they're contradictory and all that.
Very much.
But anyways, so this episode reminded me of Groundhog Day. Because it's over and over again. And I liked that at points she kind of broke the fourth wall and was like, you're way off, where she was pretending not to know him. Mm-hmm. And then even the little girl was like, you're cheating, dude. You can't just ask me, you know? It's like,
it's almost like she broke character.
Yeah. But I, you know, since this is the world of Legion, you could almost believe that, no, she didn't know who he was, but then she needed to know for a second so she could tell him that. And so she did. I mean, you just never really know, but I love the artistry of that. And then she seems exasperated with him, and she's just like, wrong, and walks off, or she goes, meh.
Well, he admitted he was a little thick, so it took him a little while.
I love it. He's trying real hard. And
he was.
When he sees that couple, and he's all, it's about the couple, and you know, she's like, wrong, watch it again. And then he's all kind of frustrated, and he looks over at him, get a room, like he's just mad. That was super cute. So I
he was standing there watching them for a long time too. He was watching them, watching rude. Her.
But I like the conceit of just the him having to, I mean, it was really a test for him. I guess the other ones were tests for him too, but it didn't feel like Sid trying to get out of a maze. It felt like him trying to get out of a maze. He was the one who had to figure it out.
Yeah, well, because she wasn't in the maze at that point. I mean, Ptonomy and Melanie were in the maze, and maybe that's why. I mean, it took a little bit more effort with Melanie than what it did with Ptonomy, but with Sid, she wasn't in the maze anymore. She was trying to show him something, and that's why I think it took him so long, and that's why it was more of an effort.
Why was, okay, so do you feel like when the monk died, then this just became something completely different? Because she was chattering. She was.
Yes, I agree. I think that initially she was, because we did see her teeth chattering whenever he found her. And that's kind of where it cut off the last episode. But I think that after we saw later that everyone woke up from that, oh, you know, it's
this is
not
something else.
Yeah, that was something else. And I think Sid took that opportunity with David there to, because then even Carrie said later, he's like, they're not, this is something else. They're awake. You know, the brain waves were different than everyone else.
Yeah.
So,
and maybe she was keeping him there on purpose because it was important for her that he connect with her on that level. Or maybe it was just something that kind of organically sprang out of that because they were already in this mind space and it just happened. Right.
That's what I'm thinking. And that she took the opportunity with him being there to show him, and he had to be able to get it. She couldn't tell him.
Yeah, which makes sense. And I think he already did know, but he didn't know consciously. He knew on a subconscious level. But I don't want to talk about that quite just yet. First, I want to just, so like, he's going at it as if it was the same as Ptonomy and Melanie, which means that I need to find what their core desire is that's trapping them here. And that's what he kept looking for. And so he starts off just on a simple level that any of us would do, or kind of fan fiction, like, well, she can't touch anyone, so it must be about her loneliness and her longing, and she needs to be in a museum, a place where she can be a part of the world without needing to touch it. And she goes, do you think ghosts like living in a haunted house? I didn't quite get that at first, but I thought about it, and it's like, well, ghosts are similar. They live in a space but can't really interact, and it's no fun. Like, they're tormented.
They can't communicate. They can't touch.
So she's like, that's dumb, dude. Think again.
She said that so well. She's like, you don't know anything.
Yeah.
She's
and
like,
then
watch it again.
He really came off like a schmuck when he was like, you think that if you show me who you are, all the mistakes, that I won't love you anymore, and you're afraid to show me. And I think Dan Stevens, he even played that a little schmuckish, like a little more frantic than usual. But she's like, no, she's never been afraid to show him what she's all about, bare her soul to him. So that was a good guess, but at least he was thinking a little deeper than having it just be about her powers or you know, just not being able to touch. Anyways, I think this is really good because figuring out a more complicated version of what is going on with her actually deepens her character. And I feel like she's a fuller character after this episode.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think so much in the first season, not that she wasn't a great character already, because I already loved her in season one, but I really liked, because we got to know David so well during season one. We spent so much time in his mind and learning about him and developing his character. And I think I really love this because this brings her more to the forefront. She's like the second protagonist of this of this show, I feel. And it's I think really done her a great service in developing her. And there's a love story here and that part of it that you brought up where, you know, that one of those attempts where he's like, you know, you're just scared to show me the real you. And, you know, you're afraid that that you'll scare me away. And I like how they at least brought that up and kind of scoffed at it. And that's whenever she did the little, you know.
Yeah. But she went, try again. And she said it kind of like, you're kind of on the right path though, because it is about not so pretty events that have happened, but he just didn't quite have the right angle on it.
Yeah, he was going in the right direction. He just needed a little bit of additional help. So, I really like how we got more of Sid. I think it was great to really fully develop her in this one.
Yeah, and now that the Shadow King is not inside David screwing with him, the whole first season was really exploring his mind with him at a disadvantage and struggling. And now that he's more stable and more clear, at least that we think, he does feel a little, he still feels like the protagonist, but not as much. He's, you know, things have evened out a little between him and Sid and even Carrie a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's your four?
My number four, it's pretty darn close to what you had already talked about, was the multiple attempts, because I want to go into more detail a little bit about not just Sid's memory trip in my number five, but all of those attempts during her memory trip. I really like how David had to go in and kind of figure this out, that it wasn't so easy for him, because he thought it was going to be easy. He's like, it's okay, you're in the maze, let's go home.
Yeah, there's no problem, it's a snap.
And she's like, nope. He's having to keep going through, and he keeps getting a little bit more frustrated, having to go through and watch. And I really like how we got a lot of the different, I mentioned earlier how we got to see more wrinkles of things, and we got to see more details of things that happened. We got some specifics, and she kept showing him more and more of what she was trying to show him. And I know that we'll talk a little bit about the end thing that she was trying to show him, but you know, she kept exposing herself more and more so he could understand. And I really liked all of those details, and we really got to see some pretty messed up stuff that I know that we'll probably talk a lot about.
Yeah.
And I really liked David's devotion to her as well, because he really was really frustrated, I think, and kind of at the end of his rope. And like you said, she was kind of like, you know, you're on the right track, but you're not quite there. Keep going and watch it again. And I like that he said that he was not going to give up on her. Yeah. He said, I'll never give up.
When he was like at his most frustrated, and he probably might have been thinking, I don't know if I can do this, but he's like, no, I'm not going to give up. So that was really sweet. And also it was sweet that he was like the second time through kind of protective of her, like as a baby. Oh, she doesn't like to be touched. And then when she was a little girl being teased, he's like, piss off.
That
was so good. She's going through her memories and protecting her. He's a sweet guy.
He was a really sweet guy. Her. Yeah. And I mean, we've really kind of talked it out. I'm not really sure. I mean, we'll probably go into more detail in it, but that was just my number four, was the multiple attempts and David's frustration. And the more exposure that we got, the more details that we got each time, you know, that he went back, the things that she wanted to show him to try to make him see what it was she wanted him to see and get.
Yeah. And actually, to be fair, if I remember right, the first round, he did get more of the details that were less severe and more related to the loneliness of not being able to touch anyone, like being, you know, the baby doesn't want to be touched, little girl wears gloves, and I think maybe being teased, but it wasn't anything super dark, so you couldn't fault him too much for going there with his first guess at it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it totally made sense, and it made sense to me. And I was like, what do you mean? And you know, when she's like, nope, watch it again. And I'm like, what do you mean? I feel like I was a little bit like David, like, what are you talking about? That makes sense to me.
And you're like, I'm a woman and I'm supposed to know this.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I didn't know where she was going with it until later. And then it all made perfect sense. Like, I just, so much of this was a really tough episode for me to watch, and very emotional.
It's very real. I mean, it's I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing.
What you eventually get to. Okay, well, is it my turn?
Yeah, you're number four.
Okay, so my number five was the act of figuring him out, kind of like yours, you know, the attempt. And then, so four is, what did he figure out? And actually, the first line of dialogue in the episode talks about it, because it's her mom reading it one of these salons that she throws from, I think, an essay that she wrote. Afterwards, some are strong at the broken places. The word survivor used to mean one who has survived, but now modern psychiatry would have us believe that survival is a curse, like Sisyphus with his rock. And so every day we wake to survive again. And she doesn't go on to say what it really does mean, because that would spell it out too much. But
right.
I like the reference to Sisyphus, which mm-hmm. I don't really know that myth too well, but I think it's just this guy has to keep pushing a rock up a hill every day.
Yeah, he was the king of Ephyra, and he was punished for his self-aggrandizing craftiness and deceitfulness, and he was forced to roll an immense boulder up a hill only for it to roll down when it nears the top, repeating the action for eternity.
Right, which felt like what David was having to do for a while here. So then David at the end mentions that same piece, you know, as it's written, the world breaks everyone, and afterwards some are strong at the broken places. And I like that he said only some are, because that feels right too. Some just get broken, and I feel like that about some things in my life. If it comes up, I'm just triggered by it. Like it does, I don't feel stronger because of it, but there are plenty of things that I've gone through that have made me a stronger person that weren't so nice. So mm-hmm. that really rang true. The thing that I really loved about that, because that's what it was. It was about seeing all these shitty experiences that Sid had to go through because of her situation and how she's a really strong person because of that. But the part that is really poignant is that her and David share that. And I liked when he said, you survived the bullies and the way they made you feel. You cut yourself with the dullest blade because it felt the worst. I know that life because I lived it too. And she's like, I know. And then I met you and it was true love. And that's where I thought, yeah, he knows this, but he didn't know it consciously. But that just made it snap together so much more real for why they vibed so well so quickly. Because mm-hmm. you can feel when people are on a similar wavelength because, yeah, I mean, you know, the montage that happened at the very beginning of this series, the pilot, David is going through a whole bunch of shit through his whole life, being bullied mm-hmm. and he's in that car and it explodes and I think he gets arrested and, you know, just all kinds of trouble. And
tries to hang himself. And
yeah. Did you remember that while you were watching this, all that stuff? Because mm-hmm. it's a parallel
with
what's going on with Sid. Yeah,
absolutely.
So they're two of a kind here, and that was really sweet to see. They're junkies and masochists and hookers. Not quite, but there's that aspect of, or I don't know, some people might not feel this way, but for me personally, when I'm with somebody and I feel like both of us have our darknesses, that's a turn on. You know, it's like, yeah, we're kind of like partners in crime.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think dark does attract dark. You know, and I mean, I know everybody's done some messed up stuff in their lives. Everybody has something that they need to overcome. I think they probably have a little bit more, and they definitely are on the same. They're both, you know, mutants and have had to, you know, suffer with that throughout the world, and how the world, not only just dealing with it, but how the world has treated them because of it and because they're different. And yeah, and I think that it was, you know, really sweet when he's talking about all of what he has seen her do as far as the cutting, switching bodies with that, you know, future sexual predator, and then beat up the mean girls. You know, that was kind of a crappy thing to do.
And yeah. Then,
you know, and then he's like, well, I was a lunatic drug addict and I messed up everything. And he's like, the world's a cruel place, you know, especially for us. And he reaffirms his love for her. Of course, that's not quite where she was going with that. It was kind of sweet that he, you know, tells her that, but she's like, nope, still not getting it. But yeah, dark. I think dark does attract dark, and it is, I think, kind of a turn on when you can kind of relate to mm-hmm. somebody who's been some similar stuff that you've been through.
Yeah, and there's the aspect of, well, we've both made it through a lot, and so that made us stronger, and that's going to allow us to protect this love. But also, yeah, there's, what did she say? Something about sinners, God likes sinners, and
their fire burns the brightest.
Yeah, yeah. So that is sort of reveling in their darkness a little bit too, which is cool. But mm-hmm. they kind of faked us out a little bit because she's feels a little cold, and she's saying, talking about how love is a hot bath and it just makes things soft. And for a second, I thought maybe she was going to break up with him. Did you get that vibe?
I was afraid there for a little bit, and I was yeah. a little bit surprised about how cold she was to him. Because like you said, right. in the beginning, when he first approaches her in the museum, and she acts like she doesn't know him, and I don't think it was an act. I think she kind of did it on purpose. I think that that was, when you see where this ended up and where she wanted him to be and what she was trying to teach him, I think it was kind of a tough love kind of approach. Okay.
Yeah, and then she kind of pushed it a little further, talking about they sell us this lie that love is going to save us. All it does is make us stupid and weak. And I'm like, oh, man, this is over. It's over.
I know. I was like, no, not David and Sid.
And then she goes, look at me, because you can see he's feeling the same way. No, love isn't going to save us, but it's what we have to save. And it's like, oh, okay. And the pain makes us strong enough to do it. So then, yeah, that was... So that was really satisfying.
Yeah, I couldn't handle it if David and Sid broke up. It would be way too emotional. It was emotional watching this show. It was emotional for me personally. If they had broke up, I probably wouldn't be here right now. I'd just be crying.
That's enough. But she's always seemed pretty strong. David mm-hmm. has had his moments, but he was so off balance in the first season. I think she could see the potential in him. But now that he's free of the Shadow King this season... He seems so much more stable and capable, and I'm sure shit will happen, but at least for now, he's so, they're right there together, really, really solid.
Yeah, but also I think one dynamic that, we need to remind ourselves of is that for her, she's been in this relationship for over a year now, mm-hmm. this whole time that David's been missing. She's had time to get to, like, on at least on her side of things, this relationship for her has matured. He's only been, and I don't know the time frame. I'm just going to say it's still only been like a couple of days since he's been back, out of his little sphere. He's still kind of in that honeymoon phase. So I think she's trying to snap him out of that and bring him to where she's at, because that's where mm-hmm. they need to be in this maturity level of their relationship.
Yeah. I think they got to a new level. I mean, like I said, I feel like the reason why they vibed together was all of the stuff that we discovered in this episode was under the surface. And so it attracted them together, even if they might not have consciously known it. But mm-hmm. it does make a difference to realize it. And also, I just think it would be totally awesome if with anyone, like someone I didn't like, if I could go through this experience that David went through. Because if you saw a montage, like in VR or something, of someone's painful experiences, I think you'd sympathize with almost everybody you ever met,
mm-hmm.
if you went through that. That's just a nice reminder.
It is a reminder. We're all human and we've all been through shit.
Yeah, right. What's your three?
My number three, kind of touched on it a little bit. I don't have a whole lot to say because we didn't get a whole lot of it, but it was kind of cool to see that what we thought was going to happen with the monk dying in the last episode when he fell from the roof, mm-hmm. would everyone snap out of the maze? Everybody that was still trapped, because Carrie was still trapped. I'm guessing all of those folks, I don't know that was like for sure who they were talking about when Clark's running down the hall, I guess to the bathroom, because everybody had to go pee.
I didn't catch that.
He's like 300 people, have to go to pee and stuff. Oh, so weird. I don't know if that 300 people was.
Oh man, they would have pissed themselves.
I just squat where I'm at. I'm not waiting in line for no one. And I'm not above going to the men's room. I don't care. If I got to go, it's happening. Just make way. But I didn't know if that 300 people that he talked about that all woke up at once and needed to go pee, if that included those folks that were in that room, everyone
yeah,
that they had
I think
shut
so.
Off in that room, or
yeah,
if it was
all
just
the teeth chatterers.
Yeah, I assumed that, but I don't know that was really confirmed, because I didn't know what that number 300 really meant. But I think it was just nice to get that affirmation that it... Don't know for sure that it was the monk. I'm still not for sure if I totally believe it was just the monk, or if it is Farouk, or somehow a link between the two. I don't know. But they did wake up after he had died. And when Carrie had... This was after he found David and Sid... When they realized they were not still, because they were like, well, everyone else woke up. What happened? And he says that they're awake, but they're not like the others. But I wondered, I don't know. I guess I'm just still wondering about that connection, if it was really the monk or if it's Farouk. I don't know. Maybe we'll get more on that. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it, like we talked about last week, it really seemed like when Farouk's body was at the monastery, it was causing a lot of chaos. And I think maybe that's what infected the monks, actually.
So, right.
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't so much, maybe part of it was the monk, but maybe it was because they were talking, the narration in the last one was talking about, you know, how those, like the whole, what was it, that twitch, like that nervous twitch, you know, kind of spread around, and then that nervous laughter, and this is the teeth chattering thing, and they're stuck in the maze. You know, maybe it was just that finally, you know, got broken or something.
It seemed pretty clear that when the monk died, the spell was broken for whatever reason, which doesn't totally go with that analogy of whatever they were calling conversion. I forgot, with all the cheerleaders. Like, if the main cheerleader had died, would all the other cheerleaders have been fine? I don't think so.
I don't know. And then I like that we at least knew what happened to Carrie, too, because when, remember how he kind of, like, just disappeared into female Carrie as she's sitting
right
in the hallway?
And we didn't know for sure.
And then we saw that he did. Yeah, I was like, because we had never quite seen them merge that way before, and it was nice to know that he was with her throughout that. So that's really just all I want to say, was just kind of the affirmation that when the monk died, everyone woke up.
And I liked how they film stuff with, well, all this stuff. It's, they don't do like flashy, like when Cid, her power is that she exchanges consciousness with someone else. But then when it's over, the bodies switch places. But you don't ever see a floop or anything, like a bright light. They just kind of move the camera and suddenly it's the other person there, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of subtle, and I like that. And with Carrie and Carrie, you don't, I mean, maybe we will see this sometime, but they never just focus the camera right on them and you can see him coming out. It's at a weird angle, and she's like, he's like, I'm in here, and pull, and you see an arm coming out. It's just so cool.
It's really cool how they play with camera angles, and it's amazing what they can do with this show on a TV budget. You know, I don't know what their budget is, but I know it's not a big movie budget, so they have to get really creative, and this show is on such a high level, and the things that, that's why I love it so much, because they're able to do so much with so little.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing.
You are gonna so love the Ash versus Evil Dead finale this week.
I'm anxiously awaiting.
It's incredible.
I'm gonna love it and be sad at the same time.
Oh, totally. Okay, my number three is these scars and suffering that Cid underwent that led to her strength. The first time through, baby doesn't like to be touched, which is sad for me because I insisted with both my babies that we have skin to skin contact right away, because I, you know, heard that was important for connection. And you didn't get, she kind of did, but the baby didn't like it. But I did think it was cute when she reached in and brushed her hand across the baby's face, and the baby's like, meh.
Yeah. She was moving as much as she could, kicking her feet. Yeah.
Yeah. And then as soon as she pulled away, she was fine. And then you see young girl Cid wearing gloves, and she's looking at that fish and getting close, but it's like safely behind the glass. And so I don't know, there's just like these moments of loneliness. But then later we see more serious, where you can see why she might have ended up getting sent to Clockworks, which I like, because we really didn't have a sense of that before. We heard it was antisocial behavior. But now you see these mean girls. Poor lost elf, keeps to herself, lives with her mom because her dad's in hell.
And how awful.
Fuck you. I'm going to whack you with this lacrosse stick. Then getting freaked out when her mom's friend touches her.
Yeah.
Like, you have a few incidents like that as a mom, you're gonna get worried. Then when she goes to the punk club and she's bumping up against people and you see her face changing. And I don't think she was switching bodies with them, because I don't think her power had fully developed yet. But I felt like maybe she was just absorbing parts of them into her or something.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I mean, I can't see that she'd be switching back and forth so quickly.
No.
But
because she didn't as a baby.
Right. But right? She was, it was definitely like a sense of rebellion, because, you know, purposely took the gloves off.
Fuck it.
And, you know, I'm going out and I'm going to do this. So Yeah, that was exciting.
Yeah, she has a reckless side to her for sure. And so does David. So that's another thing they have in common. But the punk club thing I thought was cool because it was like she was experiencing these different identities, and she had just done a more innocent version of that that a lot of young girls do, which is play dress up and do the different poses, you know, trying on the different identities. And then she does like the super power mutant version of it. But that somehow led to her, we don't see why, but she's restrained in a bed in an institution with her mom by her side. So I'm imagining that she came home and was just whacked out because of that experience.
I was wondering, because we saw it happen after at the punk club, after she's thrashing about with the crowd, and it was hard to tell. I was like, I don't think that she's switching, but clearly there was something happening there. And I don't know if it was that or if it was that very last incident that sent her there.
Oh, the shower? Yeah, it could have been. Yeah. Well, I'm getting to that. So she cuts herself, and that's hard to watch and painful, but it seems like it's understandable for a girl like that who can't ever touch anyone and wants to feel something, you know? And I like that they kind of hinted that she might do that earlier on, I think, but she didn't do it. She was just drawing, and I thought, oh, she's going to cut, and then she didn't, and then later she did. I was like, oh.
Yeah, it looked like she was going to. She was drawing on herself with those three X's that were on the inside of her wrist, and she did use those scissors, and she started to kind of look like she was just more grazing herself, and then she got the idea, and then she started cutting herself in a part of her leg.
And then she switched bodies with that guy who got aggressive and violent with her, frigid bitch, and then whacked those girls like two for one, you know, two birds with one stone.
Hell yeah.
And then framed him. He did it. And then, yeah, the shower scene, which we heard about, right, last season?
Mm-hmm. Yep, she told David about that.
Yeah, so then we get to see she wants to experiment and go mess around with her mom's boyfriend, and then he gets blamed for it. But I'm sure that could have been, I don't know, she looked kind of pleased with herself at the end, but you'd think that wouldn't be healthy, a healthy experience for her to go through.
I don't think it would be a healthy experience at all. That was a disturbing
right, very disturbing. Yeah, I'm like, do we really want to see this? But it was pretty powerful. So yeah, that just all that stuff, it's like, whoa, man, you see her through a little bit of a new lens. But it didn't, I mean, I did hope that, oh god, I hope that this reckless side of you that would sleep with your mom's boyfriend, that would whack these girls and blame a kid, that would cut yourself, I hope that you have grown past all of that, because it's just dangerous to yourself and other people. But it was really fascinating to watch, and it didn't make me think any less of her or anything like that. I thought it was exciting and sad and tragic.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I don't really want to say any of her behavior was really, she was only 15. Like that, what happened there in the shower, she was only 15, and I... You know, she.
When I was 15, I would have done the same thing in reverse. Probably.
I mean, I know. I looking back, like I said, this episode, you know, was pretty emotional and hit some high points for me, and some things that you know, it kind of makes you go.
Things from your past come up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thinking, we don't have to reveal all of them, but just give me the top five. I'm just kidding.
Top five. Well, let's see. Number one.
That time I slept with my mom's.
Well, I never switched places with my mother. You know, we never switched bodies.
Did you ever whack anybody with a lacrosse stick?
Well, I came from a teeny tiny school. We didn't have lacrosse. But, you know, so I can certainly get with the whole, and I think a lot of people can. It certainly doesn't make me special by any means. You know, I think a lot of us girls have dealt with, you know, the girl bullying and the mean girls thing.
Yeah.
You know, have experienced things like that. And how that makes you feel when you feel different or you feel alone and isolated from, you know, your peers, and, you know, then you get a hard time about it. The cutting was certainly something that was definitely very relatable. And there were some other things that certainly touched a point. So it was hard to watch.
Please don't do that anymore.
I haven't done that in a really long time, but I can certainly relate. You know, she feels like she's numb on the inside, and that's a, you know, I won't speak for everyone, but a you know, kind of a big reason why a lot of people do that is they have all that pain on the inside, and they think that if they can feel that pain on the outside, that makes them feel better, and it makes that internal pain go away.
Interesting. Yeah, I've heard something like that. The way you just put that made it make more sense than I've ever heard it before, though.
Yeah, you're either numb and you want to feel pain, so you create that pain. And I think, and you know, David was like, I know that you used the dull blade because it was going to hurt the most,
right? Or maybe is it like this for some people, where if the pain is worse on the outside, then the pain on the inside won't feel as bad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, if you can kind of, it helps you forget or helps make it not feel as painful on the inside, because it's so bad what you're feeling on the mm-hmm. inside, that you want to try to feel that on the outside and forget what you're doing.
This, I hope this isn't a really stupid question, but I wonder if people who might think about cutting themselves ever just like slap themselves really hard so it doesn't make a permanent mark.
I don't know. I've never done that.
'Cause it might also be about, God, I don't know if we should talk about this too much. It's pretty serious, but the mutilation part of it, I feel like it's something too for some people, which is, that just gets me so much.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, please don't do that anymore. Okay. Where were we? I think it's your turn.
You were finishing up your mm-hmm. number three, I think. So yeah, my number two. So my number two, really quick, because we just got a little snippet, but Lenny. We got Lenny back.
Right. It seemed like that was the bona fide Lenny. We don't know.
We don't know, but I mean, because
her body's supposed to be gone, right? He said he could get her another body, but I was assuming that would not be an Aubrey Plaza.
Right. Yeah. Like it would be like her psyche, her consciousness, but right. It wouldn't be her physical, because yeah, she was supposed to have died at Clockworks in the wall. So I'm assuming that we're going to get that, like something big is going to happen. I feel like this episode is great is what it was, because it was a little slower in pace and it was so character driven that I really think that we're going to get something big, the next episode. So I'm guessing that we're probably going to get that, but I was super excited to see her back because, God, I love Aubrey Plaza. She plays this character, I mean, to perfection. She is so brilliant. So I was super excited to see her back. She looks alive. She looks real. I mean, they're dragging her through the hallway there. And I really hope that we get to see what happened. It's like, did she escape? Did he let her go? Is it a trap? You know, I mean, it didn't seem like he was too willing to let her go. So that's why it leads me to believe that maybe he's like, well, we're just going to, you know, we're going to let you go into D3 and he's got something up his sleeve. So but I was just super excited to see her back because, you know, she had that little sly smile on her face and she's like, I'm back.
But she looked kind of skeeved out too a little bit.
Like, she looked a little burned out. Yeah. Well, she wasn't looking so great when she was going up to David, like, you know, hey, you got anything on ya?
She looked kind of like that to me here too, just a little.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, she did. No, but she looked great. I was super excited. I love her.
Nice little twist at the end there.
Yeah.
Throw her in.
Absolutely.
Okay, my number two is the development of Sid's powers, because we know that her power is to switch consciousness and then later the bodies switch to go where the consciousness went. That's what it seems like. But like I said, as a baby, she wasn't switching bodies, but she knew that she didn't want to be touched. And so my theory is that something happened early on from birth that she was getting some kind of uncomfortable sensation from it, right? And that may have been some kind of telepathic thing. And that when she got older, it started to, like, the what was happening on the floor of the punk club was, I think she was absorbing people's psyches or something.
And isn't that kind of what David does?
Well, I in a different way, though.
Or
I think,
at least the comic book character, it's what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, they're like deep inside and they'll come out one at a time. But with her, I felt like it was just like right on the surface. I mean, her face was changing. That was supposed to imply to me that she was taking on things from the people around her. That's what I thought that meant. Those were the faces of the people that she was bumping up against.
Yeah.
But then I think, I don't know if this is right, it seemed like when she switched places with the guy who was accosting her, the kid, mm-hmm. that maybe that was the first time when she kissed him, because when she was in his body, she looked kind of surprised. But then again, if that was the first time, then it seemed like that was kind of the point of why she did it, because she knew she was going to switch and then beat up those girls. So maybe it wasn't the first time. But I mean, with mutants in the comics, a lot of times their powers don't fully come to fruition until they hit puberty.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it could be something like that with her.
Yeah, I wondered that too. It didn't look like it was the first time for her. Like, she knew what was going to happen when she kissed that boy.
You're right.
She didn't look too surprised by what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And she didn't look too thrown off by it happening.
But maybe it wasn't the first time, but we have seen for sure that earlier on that did not happen. Like, if it right. happened when she was a baby, then you would have had the doctor delivering her going, wah!
Right. Well, I'm not saying it was or it wasn't. She just didn't look too surprised. Like, she clearly knew by kissing him that was what was going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
And she didn't look too taken aback, like, oh, I didn't know for sure if that was going to happen. Like, she didn't know that maybe her powers had reached that level. If what you're saying is...
I thought she did a little, but she had to know what was going to happen. Anyways, then... with the baby, though, I liked when the baby made eye contact with David.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost creepy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that happened, but it just reminded me that I think eye contact is really important for Sid, since she can't touch. And she does make really strong eye contact, especially mm-hmm. with David. And she was with her mom, too, when they were just sitting in a room reading across the room. And you could tell that they had a good relationship just by their eye contact. Because that's the connection that she can have with most people.
Right.
Even as a little baby.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that she didn't develop the aversion to touch because she had weird experiences with body switching, which is what I always assumed, but that she was just born with that. She was born with this aversion to touch.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here trying to think, in season one, as she was like talking about it a little bit more, it was almost like it was painful, but she had grown to where it wasn't as painful. But I feel like maybe early on for her, it was almost painful for mm-hmm. someone to touch her, and maybe it's physically or psychically.
So going to that punk club is almost like a mutant version of cutting yourself.
Yeah,
it's like, fuck it.
Yeah, she just wants to experience it. I mean, mm-hmm. I think she was tired of the restrictions. I mean, that was that's the whole point of rebelling, is you're tired of the restrictions around you, and she's tired mm-hmm. of her limitations, and she went against that, and she's like, I'm just going to go full in. I'm taking off my gloves, and I'm going to go in this pit where I know I'm going to be, you know, in full-on contact with people. I'm going to take that risk, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to experience mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, and all of the rebellion, the whacking those mean girls and blaming the guy, it's just, she's tired of being kicked around. The one thing that I think is probably the worst thing she did was sleeping with her mom's boyfriend and then mm-hmm. and then letting him get in trouble for it. That's dark. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing where I do feel kind of judgmental. Like, man, that's fucking dark.
That was a little dark on her. Like I said, she was 15, and yeah. I certainly
and I
don't
said
want
I might have
anyone...
done the same thing. So
I certainly don't want anyone getting into my head and looking at what I did at 15,
right?
And crucifying me for it—that's for sure. So in one way, I sympathize, because I'm like, I know I overcame a lot of shit and went through a lot of things and the bad decisions
sure.
that I made.
Absolutely,
you know, I cannot. But I that was probably the worst thing. I think it wasn't so much. I couldn't fault her so much for wanting to experience it. It seemed like the safest thing for her to do. She clearly couldn't do it in her own body.
Maybe she didn't mean for her mom to find out. It's like she was hoping it would be over before anyone knew.
Right. And I don't know that she really... I don't know. I struggle a little bit thinking exactly what her... I think in one way I kind of knew what her intentions were, but then maybe that's not what she wanted to happen once she got in there. I don't know. There's...
Well... He winked at her right when she was feeling really rebellious, going off to the punk club.
Yeah,
and
which
you could
was
tell
creepy.
It was creepy, absolutely. But you could tell she liked it. She kind of mm-hmm. smiled. And so I think that's where the idea took root. And then when she did it, and I always thought this, like in soap operas or whatever, when someone gets plastic surgery to look like somebody else and it fools everyone, I'm like, nah, that's BS, because... So much of what we are is our movements and our intonation and the way we pronounce words, and even the musculature of your face. Like, this is morbid, but if you ever seen someone in a coffin who you knew, they don't look the same, right? So you just, but I think they did a fairly good job in this case of having Lily Rabe act like somebody else. She seemed so, she was shaky in the shower. I mean, and Sid was in her.
And sure.
Yeah, but I think that her boyfriend, mom's boyfriend, could sense something's different here, and I'm really turned on by it, which just adds to the creepiness level. Like, suddenly she seems very unsure, and so, yeah, creepy.
It was creepy on a lot of levels.
But to be on his side, just winking at your girlfriend's daughter, it could be just a friendly thing. I mean, it seemed pretty creepy, but it's, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. And he did not know. He could have no way of knowing that it was her psyche. And now he's going to be branded a pedophile. So that's pretty rough.
That was pretty rough. That was, you know, like I said, I have issues not so much with what they act, but whenever she later on just allowed him to be, you know, arrested and taken away and be blamed like that. You know, I thought, well, that's kind of going over just a little bit.
Based on what we knew about him, like, we didn't know anything really bad, super bad about him.
Yeah, and he definitely seemed taken aback by it.
I would say so. It'd be kind of weird if he was like, this again. So what's your number one?
Number one is Fighters Not Lovers. So I just thought it was interesting that we've, you know, after all of David's attempts trying to figure out what Sid was trying to teach him, that we get to this part where she, you know, is, you know, and we've already talked about it a little bit about saying how love makes you soft. And she tells David, you know, life is war and that their battle and the apocalypse to come, you know, won't be love that saves them, but you have to use what has happened to you, those, that trauma, that pain, and you have to use it like armor. And she encourages him to do the same. And that's what's going to help them to come. And she wants him to use that pain to toughen up. And I thought, you know, that's a good idea. I think that that's what so many people do. And I think it's great when you can take what's happened to you in your life and those things that you've had to overcome, no matter what it is, big or small. Like I said, everybody has something, I feel, that they have to overcome, whatever that might be. But I think she's not thinking about what the consequences of that might be and what might happen later. Is
right.
What,
you don't necessarily want him to be strong, huh?
Well, not necessarily be strong. Well, and, well, with David, I think it could be really dangerous knowing what we know about his character. And if they lead us into like comic book territory and how powerful of a mutant that he really is.
Or even what they've suggested, yeah, that might happen on the show. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And then they have test shown on the show about him being like the most powerful mutant that they've ever known. You know, clearly that might be a bad thing. But also, you know, she was using love, and I think a tough love kind of thing with him to get him to see what she wanted him to see and the point she was trying to make about, you know, exposing herself like that, that I think it can harden you and make you cold. And what if you no longer feel that love because you've built up this tough exterior, right? That maybe what, I don't know, it might seem like it's kind of defeating the purpose a little bit. And that, I don't know that that's what's going to happen, but I worry about that, that you want to protect love and that's what you're fighting for. So use this pain and the traumas that, you know, to build you up and to harden you. But what if you become so hard that then you no longer feel that love anymore?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, you have to, in my opinion, find a balance between vulnerability and strength.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. I mean, we know that that doesn't always work.
Yeah.
And then
it's the only way it can work. It's the only way that love can work is if you find that balance, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I agree with you. But not everybody always finds that balance. That's for sure. And then again,
like 50% don't.
Yeah.
Okay. Or something.
Well, and then what Sid is talking about, you know, that philosophy doesn't always work either. You know, there's lots of people that can't take that pain and trauma and make it, and they don't come out the stronger for it. Sometimes it makes life harder for them. You know, they're not able to overcome those traumas.
I mean, I think the only way to get strong is through resistance and challenge and overcoming challenges. Like, just as simple as working out. The only way you're going to have strong muscles is if you lift weights and, you know, you tear them up and push yourself through the pain. And it's like that with psychological pain too. But sometimes it can leave, yeah, scars, or it can just crush you. So there's a lot of variables that make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you need pain. You need to go through tough times. That's like when I'm sure you know this because you're a mom, but when you're raising your kids, if you are too overprotective, then they're not going to have the hard experiences that are going to teach them about life.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to let them get run over by a car or something.
Well, I told you to stay out of the road.
Yeah, like let you figure out by yourself.
In the red means go, and the green yeah. means stop, and that kid gets run over.
Oh God!
I'm going to hell for laughing about that.
No, that's hilarious. My turn.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've kind of already touched a lot about it. I just kind of found that interesting. You know, that I worry that, you know, that might not go where she thinks it's going to go, that's working for her. Maybe she has found that balance, but I worry that maybe David won't have that balance.
Yeah, I don't know if she's, I really wasn't clear if she was trying to, what she was really trying to get out of that. I was kind of guessing that she just wanted him to know her, and that's a major part of her personality, but it does seem like she was trying to coach him.
I think she was trying to teach him, because this was not about saving Sydney. This was not, she needed to be saved. This was her teaching him something.
Okay.
And the only way that she knew how.
Yeah, that does, now that you put it that way, it seems right. Like,
she didn't need to be saved.
Right. Love is not going to save us. It's going to be strength. And we need to be strong in order to protect that love, I think is basically what she was trying to say. And you need to pull from the pain and suffering that you've had and use that.
Right. And that,
but
this
why?
Is what we're
why
fight
is it
for?
So important for her to, because they're just in this struggle. That's why. And she's trying to shore them up.
Because she knows that she says life is a battle, but then she also knows the upcoming battle that they're going to have. The upcoming battle. And I think some of it, because that was one question I had, was how much do you think what she's doing is influenced by what he told her about his meeting with future Sid?
Right.
Because he's told her some about, you know, there's this future, you're different, you've got an arm missing, I don't know if I'm alive or dead, Farouk is dead, but there's something that's coming that kills everyone. So I'm wondering how much of what she's doing is influenced. Like,
who's
she's
better
trying to...
looking, me in the future or me now?
Well, that's just a girl thing. We all kind of are like, well, who's prettier?
yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, this... It's funny how this show, even though I feel like there's so much rich psychological concepts, that a lot of times it comes down to the plot. And I think even though this is a very emotional episode, it is about the plot. It's just her getting him ready for what's coming up with Farouk.
Well, because I think that she sees that the love that he has for her has weakened him. Like, maybe it's over this time that she's had, this year that she's had away from him, she's been able to put that in a different place and find that balance with the hardness and the softness. And she's got to that place. Now she needs to fast forward him to that place and say, this is where we need to be.
Plus he's dumb. So yeah.
Well, he's a little thick. He's not dumb. He's just a little thick. And I can relate to that too. And he's like, I'm sorry it took me this long. I'm a little thick. Yeah. And I'm like, I get you, dude. I feel like it would have taken me just as many times to get to that place.
Well, yeah. I mean, so. That's what happens in a podcast too. You need two people to figure shit out sometimes.
Yeah. I can sit here and figure this stuff out myself. That's for sure.
Okay. Well, in the intro, my number one, when they first did the first montage of her as a baby and everything, they played this song. It's called 22 Over Soon by Bon Iver. And I'd never heard the song before, but I instantly fell in love with it. And the words, I don't know if they totally go with it. Actually, I'm going to play a little bit of it here.
Where you gonna look for confirmation? And if it's ever gonna happen? So as I'm standing at the station, it might be over soon.
All these years.
So I just thought that was so nice.
Yes, I loved it.
So emotional. And I read a little bit about it. So the song was inspired in part by Bon Iver main man Justin Vernon's unsuccessful attempt to find himself during a vacation. He explained during a press conference that he had taken a solo trip to an island off the coast of Greece in 2015. Quote, "Don't go to the Greek islands off season by yourself, trying to find myself, and I did not. I felt really poor, and I just heard this chorus in my head. This feeling might be over soon." That ended up turning into the opening line of the song. Vernon heard the line, "It might be over soon," as a kind of mantra that could suggest relief, loss, mortality, or a reason to get to work. Quote, "The bad stuff might be over soon, but maybe the good stuff might be over soon," he explained. "So you better figure out how to enjoy this life and participate in it." Which is
a nice sentiment.
Yeah. And it's nice to have that playing when you're kind of watching a life go by. It might be over soon.
I give you a kick in the pants, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Enjoy it while you can. I like the music. The show does so great. I mean, there's so many great things about this show as far as the story. And I talked about this before in the other podcast, and the visual and then the music. I mean, it's the trifecta for me. And this was really great. I thought that song that we get during the first act, seeing Sid's childhood, and then during her rebellious stint, we get Turtleneck by The National. And then we get that kind of like that dark cover of Cream, White Room, when she's cutting herself in her room.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had some other great music. And I felt like it just kind of went along with the maybe, because in the beginning it was kind of light, you know, I mean, there was some, it was a little bit of sadness with it. And I think that the music played off of that really well, but it was really beautiful at the same time. But the further and further that we got and the more
disturbing
things that we saw, you know, yeah, the disturbing things, that the music kind of changed with that. And I just thought it was just brilliant. Loved it.
Yeah. Okay. Notes.
I have a couple notes. So I was interested in the paintings that they were looking at in the museum. Did you happen to look up anything about the artist? Or
it seemed like there were a lot of gazing going on in the paintings. And then he mentioned the one painting, like, oh, I forget what he said, but it has no hands and no something about just no way to connect with the rest of the world. And she said, it's honest.
Well, and I think that it was interesting because we didn't see that painting, but it was self-portrait. And he like you said, he
like
saw it as
her.
Yeah, he was looking at it like, you know, oh, it looks uncomfortable because there's no hands, there's no feet, and they're trapped in all this negative space. She saw it as survival. And I think that's where, you know, that was very early on, you know, before he went through all of these attempts to kind of figure out where she was at and what she was trying to show him and teach him. And I think that, you know, she didn't verbalize that, but for me, that's what it was, is that she saw it one way, he saw it, and that, I think that's how we all probably look at art. But I was looking it up, and the artist for all of those paintings, his name was Egon Schiele. He was an Austrian painter. He had quite an interesting and kind of twisted life himself. So I thought it was interesting that they used paintings from this artist, but also his work also has a connection to David Howler's comic book roots. David's co-creator artist Bill Sienkiewicz was inspired by Schiele's self-portrait for the character's original design, and he took visual cues from Schiele's expressionist imagery for David's first
amazing
comic story.
That's so cool.
So I thought that
Have
was super
Have you seen
cool.
this guy's art yet, Bill Sienkiewicz? You should check it out. Everyone, I recommend. You might think it's really ugly when you first look at it. It's one of those things that it's an acquired taste, but it's unlike anything.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool. You should go look him up, this Austrian painter.
Cool.
He had quite an interesting and kind of icky kind of past in of himself, just a little bit, that was interesting when you look at the theme of kind of like what happened to Sid in her life and some of the things. It was, you know, just, you know, kind of a parallel, I thought, between the two.
Bill Sienkiewicz too, I imagine he has a dark past just based on his art, because it's so just chaotic. And I met him one time. He was doing a panel at a Comic-Con, and I had my question ready, and he seems kind of neurotic and but very verbal, and so he answered like two questions in the whole hour of the panel, And I was so frustrated because I wanted him to answer my question, but he just went on and on and on and on. He's a character.
That's cool. And then I had that quote. We heard some of it, I think, during this episode from Ernest Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms. If people bring so much courage to this world, the world has to kill them to break them. So, of course, it kills them.
Wow.
The world breaks everyone, and afterward, many are strong at the broken places. But those that will not it kills. It kills the very good and the very gentle and the very brave impartially. If you are none of these, you can be sure it will kill you too, but there will be no special hurry.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I love Hemingway, and I read that, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I love that so much. And I really want to read that book that Sid was reading. That's in my notes too. Rick Moody's The Ring of Brightest Angels Around Heaven that David quoted. And that's what brightened her up when she realized that he got it, that junkies and masochists and hookers and those who have squandered everything are the ring of brightest angels around heaven.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it sounds nice.
Well, it was like when Sid was talking about how God loves the sinners. Their fires burn the brightest.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds cool.
It touched me, and it rang true for me. I really loved
it. Just don't get it.
And those are all my notes.
Nice.
What's your notes?
The igloo sitting there with the kind of fake fire. It felt a little bit like Plato's allegory of the cave. I don't know if that was on purpose, but that's where. There's this analogy that man is like, we're in this cave and there's a fire behind us and the true objects are between us and the fire, but we're not looking at it. We're looking at the cave wall and we only see the shadows. And so that's our impression of the world. That's like a metaphor for our senses. We're not actually seeing the true world. We're just seeing like reflections. I just thought of that because they're trying to figure shit out in this episode, and it's like you're getting, and so am I as I'm watching, and I'm getting impressions, but I'm not getting the full scope of it until the end. I felt like I had a fairly good handle on it.
Mm-hmm.
What else? The artistry, there's a couple of things. The igloo birth canal I thought was really nice. When David sat next to Sid and she's like, do I know you? You know what? Just forget it. Get lost. He sits down. She's like, I'll scream creep. I'm just sitting. But then she talks to him anyway. It mm-hmm. felt like a Wes Anderson movie. You know, people yeah. say shit like that to each other, or like a really good short story. I just love that because it also feels kind of real. Like sometimes people put their hackles up a little bit, but if you're a little persistent, then they're okay as long as mm-hmm. you're nice about it, you know?
Yeah, it was fun to see her play with him a little bit.
Yeah. When teen Sydney was kissing that jerk, I know she had an X on her coat.
Mm-hmm.
Like young X-Man. And I liked her punk hairdo with the knots on top, and the song went along with that.
I know, it was like a faux mohawk instead of like
it
doing
was cool.
A, yeah, it was super cool. I feel like I'm going to go try that after we get off of here. Yeah, I'm totally going to do
too.
That. Good luck.
Yeah, the song's like, there's something about her eyes. I think her roots are rotten. This must be the reason she wears her hair up in knots.
I know. That was so cool. I love that tie-in.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Let's take a little break. There's more to come, so stay with us.
My mother lets your daughter dance with me. I'd like to spin her wild around the cottonwood tree. There's something about her eyes, I think her roots are rotten. This must be the reason she wears her hair up in knots. Oh no, this is so embarrassing. Ah, we're pissing face.
All right, we're back and it's time for some news.
Okay, first one that we have is from Marvel.com, and this is an interview with Jeremy Harris, also known as Potonomy. They asked him, they said it was interesting to begin the season with the time jump that David himself didn't understand at first, given the new dynamics with the characters, including the move to Division 3. Harris says, I think we're in a place now where everyone has similar roles but different relationships. Relationships have changed a lot. So just seeing that develop and seeing those relationships develop has been nice and exciting and fun. You're reading every script going, where's this going? Why am I now close to this person when I wasn't close to them before? There are a lot of those that come about that are exciting and interesting and fun things to explore as an actor. With Ptonomy, I think he has a straightforward, direct way of addressing people and talking to people. So I think that continues, and he puts on more of a detective hat this season, which is really nice and interesting. He has some really cool obstacles to overcome.
I feel like we need more of him and also Melanie.
Yeah.
They feel much more like side characters.
I know. I hope we get a little bit more of them. I think we got a little bit more of them in season one, and they've kind of taken a little bit of a back burner with some of the story that's happening in season two. So I hope we do get more. I hope Melanie comes out of her drug funk and we get her. So, continues, Marvel says, his mutant abilities are very intriguing and different than the norm. And Harris says, yeah, I think the main thing in season two is just going deeper into how he feels about those powers. I think we're getting more into his relationship to his own powers and how they affect him and just how he feels about them. I think in season one, we see in some ways how they can be a burden, but I don't think we went too much into the ways in which remembering everything can be daunting. It's there for a job and a purpose and feeling David out. And who is this guy? What's he really about? In season two, we're getting into his relationship to his own powers and how he really feels about them.
That's great. I'm excited about that. Yeah, because there was that This American Life episode with people who remember everything and talking about how that can be a curse. So it'd be neat to see it dramatized if it's what it sounds like.
Yeah, super cool. So the next item that we have is from Collider.com. And this was an interview with Noah Hawley about Dr. Doom.
Which he's writing.
Yeah, he's writing, and this will be really exciting. Yeah, he's kind of doing the whole thing. So he was chatting with The Observer, talking about his approach to Dr. Doom. He says, as with Legion, my thought was that the superhero genre has a certain kind of movie covered, but what else can the genre do? What's interesting to me about Doom's character is he's the king of an Eastern European country, and is there a version of this that is more of a political thriller that mixes genre? It's something that Captain America Winter Soldier did really well, which was kind of make a Cold War thriller movie out of a superhero movie. This is different than that, but it does have this idea of, and I don't want to say too much about it, but it is a mixture of genres. The mandate is not to relaunch the Fantastic Four franchise as much as it is to take this fascinating and underserved character and really build a movie about him, where we ask the question, is he a hero? Is he a villain? What does he really want? We're able to explore these questions in a serious way.
That sounds cool. I'm excited. The only thing that I'm a little worried about is that, I like Legion so much, but it's quite different from the comic in a lot of ways. And with Dr. Doom, I would like it if we could finally see them do Dr. Doom justice, because they've had a couple of really crappy Dr. Dooms in the Fantastic Four movies.
Yep.
And so if he does his spin that's completely different, then I'm sure it'll be great. So I should just be like excited, but I also would love if he could figure out a way to make it feel like the Dr. Doom, the arch villain of the Fantastic Four in the comics, and do his spin on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I have faith. We'll definitely wait and see what the finished product will be, but I got faith. I mean, gosh, freaking Fargo and Legion and just the things that he's done.
I'm sure it'll be good. I just don't know if it'll be like the comic book Dr. Doom. But I'm looking forward to Venom. That last trailer looks so good.
Oh, man. I died at that new trailer.
It's like a horror movie, which I love.
I love the character Venom so much. I was talking to my kid about it. I was like, oh, my God, because we were huge. We're still big Spider-Man fans, but like the 90s Spider-Man animated version. And I mean, we're such huge fans of that. And she was a huge, huge fan of Venom, too. And I was like, go watch it like right now. You're going to die. So it's great.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. When does that come out? This year, right?
I think sometime later this year. We got a little while.
Avengers in like 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
That's it.
Oh, okay. Let's get into some listener feedback. I'll go first. Steve Brown says, a great episode. So much was packed into so little, each act between commercials. That cover of White Room was haunting. I love the way this show takes classic songs and does them slightly different and very well.
Laura Willie Swink says, whoa, that was a heavy mic drop, Sid. Watching along and really enjoying the episode, I was thinking of zany feedback like, poor David, the maze of the monk is nothing compared to deciphering the mind of his woman. Am I right, guys? Yep. And then Legion goes and drops the hammer on me. I was actually wondering if we'd be seeing the scenario Cid told David in season one as he wandered through her past, but it was far more painful, heartbreaking, and terrible than Cid made it out to be in her retelling. It seemed to me that all she wanted was to know what human contact felt like and ended up getting more than she bargained for. Love that Legion is showing us the dark side to having superpowers. Mm-hmm. Cid and David's entire dialogue about survival and love was brilliant writing. Love isn't going to save us. It's what we have to save. Storyline may not have progressed much, but my love for these two characters is so much deeper. Also, Noah Hawley, get out of my brain. The music, the Egon Schiele paintings, the punk rock dance club, I loved it all. P.S. Noah Hawley, was that kiss scene a tip of the hat to Rogue's origin story?
Yeah, maybe so, huh? That's in the movies, right? Mm-hmm. Rogue first discovers her powers when she's making out with her boyfriend, and I forget, it's been so long since I saw
that. Yeah, and she is pretty much sucking his life essence and killing him mm-hmm. as it's happening, puts him in the hospital, and he was in a coma for a really long time. I'm with you, Laura.
Boyfriend's in a coma.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's happened. You know,
you're going to talk some more about your past.
We'll do it off mic.
All right. That's going to wrap it up. I'm just kidding. Tom F says, dear Rima and Jason, great podcast. I just wanted to drop a couple of notes about last week's episode, chapter 11. One, all the talk of mazes and minotaurs obviously evokes all kinds of things derived from the Minoan legends. And so I went and looked that up because I've heard a bit about minotaurs, but I wanted to look it up. So it says, after he ascended the throne of the island of Crete, Minos, competed with his brothers to rule. Minos prayed to Poseidon, the sea god, to send him a snow-white bull as a sign of support, the Cretan bull. He was to kill the bull to show honor to the deity, but decided to keep it instead because of its beauty. He thought Poseidon would not care if he kept the white bull and sacrificed one of his own. To punish Minos, Poseidon made Pasiphae, Minos' wife, fall deeply in love with the bull. Pasiphae had craftsman Daedalus make a hollow wooden cow and climbed inside it in order to mate with the white bull. The offspring was the monstrous Minotaur, a creature with the head of a bull and the body of a man. Pasiphae nursed him, but he grew and became a ferocious being, the unnatural offspring of a woman and a beast. He had no natural source of nourishment and thus devoured humans for sustenance. Minos, after getting advice from an oracle at Delphi, had Daedalus construct a gigantic labyrinth to hold the Minotaur. And then I think there's other myths that talk about Minos ordering his enemies to be sacrificed to the Minotaur, and the hero Theseus from Athens has to go in and try to slay the Minotaur. So all kinds of stuff like that. I think that's what Tom's talking about. But anyway, back to his email. He says, but the way the actual text of the words was used to form the physical environment called to mind a very specific version that I also think you'd probably enjoy if you haven't already read it, Mark Danielewski's House of Leaves. This is a crazy, insanity-inducing book where the text itself forms such a part of the story that it's really unlike most any other book. Each of the characters have their own fonts. The density of the page changes with the pace of the story, and within the labyrinth, the direction of the text snakes around and turns back on itself to make the act of reading part of the story. The themes overall have a lot to do with the effects of words in the world, the construction of reality, and the borders of sanity, like Legion. Danielewski has been a fairly prominent experimental postmodern author over the past decade and a half, so I would not be in the least bit surprised if Noah Hawley is at least aware of the work. And it's a very sensible inspiration for some of what's going on in Legion this season. And he gives a link to the Amazon page, which I'll put in the show notes. That sounds pretty awesome.
That does sound awesome. I'm very interested. Thanks for providing that link.
Mm-hmm. And then he says, number two, I think the thing with the red and green fingers, were there red fingers? I thought there were only green fingers. Might have something to do with the compass that Carrie made that tells Cid where David is. It's reminiscent of how those kind of things work within video games, where destinations or goals are often represented on the overhead map with compass-like pointers, but on the main character POV screen as an arrow or pointing finger. It could be green or red to show if you're getting hotter or colder. And of course, could also have the meaning of those colors flipped from our usual assumptions. I'm still not sure exactly how it's working, but it might be something like it's pointing at David when he's completely in control of himself, but pointing away or in the wrong color when something else, the tar chick, Farouk, is manipulating his behavior. I don't know. That's an interesting theory. I'm not sure. Like, he didn't say anything. Who was it? Carrie? Or no. David gave it to Sid. He didn't say, "You'll see a big finger over my head." But maybe.
Look for that big green finger just right behind me there.
Is it going to be okay with you if they never tell us what that meant? Or would you like to know?
I'm okay. This is a show I'm okay with not knowing. I'm okay with uncertainty. I'm comfortable with it.
I want to know. I'll be upset if I don't find out.
No, I'm okay. If we do, awesome. If not, it's okay. It's just a wonderful mystery and maybe just a beautiful visual that maybe we're supposed to question, but it really means nothing. Okay, next one we have is from Jim Carrey. I'm guessing probably not the same Jim Carrey. Random podcast feedback based on your podcast of season 2, episode 2, but still relevant now. First off, I hate the premise of the season, having seen the Stop the Future reality from happening, waste entire seasons of Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., etc. Ugh. you mentioned how Melanie suffers from a kind of holding the fort depression. Found it hard to believe that none of you added the most bitter element to me. Oliver did not remember Melanie when he was in his astral plane hangout, nor did he remember her face to face, even when she asked him to dinner. Now, we know he had apparently had an aha moment about her right before Shadow King set up residence in him. It would be reassuring if we revisit that moment and find that Oliver's epiphany was heard by her telepathically. I cannot talk tonight, sorry. Mm-hmm. Although still, he was stolen from her. I thought we talked about that.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it a little, but I didn't remember that she never knew he remembered her. Yeah, I think he remembered.
No, he didn't know.
When he was with her, he didn't know, and maybe he kind of had an inkling but wasn't paying much attention. But yeah, it did come back to him, but then he was possessed before. Yeah, I forgot that part.
Yeah, he was trying to help save. He was like trying to give him more energy so they could do what they needed to do. And all of a sudden he's up on that ladder and he's like, "Hey, Melanie." And yeah, she never knew that. I think that would probably make her feel better had she known that, because she was still going under the belief that he still had no clue. He was just being nice, like, "Sure, I'll have dinner with you. Why not?
Is it free?"
Right. Will there be cocktails? Because we know Oliver loves his cocktails. Love that, Oliver. Anyway, he goes on to say, "You mentioned Carrie and Carrie, how unsettled she is being outside the persona. We have seen her scared and unsure of herself before when Carrie visited Oliver and she was left alone in the hospital. She's used to doing, not being. These are the least interesting characters to me, but it might be intriguing to see her come to grips with the concept that every moment is a battle for her, and not all victories look like an enemy writhing on the floor or getting a black eye." Yeah, not a boring explanation, but I'm way tired of them getting so much FaceTime and would have far preferred to have Potonomy grow a third dimension this year, but at least have realistic hope that Melanie will be developed more.
Well, yeah, I think Melanie and Potonomy, based on what you said about Potonomy in the news, I feel like he's going to be developed more, and I can't imagine they won't get back to Melanie.
It would be a disservice to her to leave her in her depression and drug-induced state.
Yeah, so I think you'll get your wish. But everything you're saying about Carrie and Carrie, I think that's... we've been talking about that, and I think it's pretty clear that girl Carrie just wants to... she just comes out for a short burst for action, and then she doesn't have to deal with the world for the rest of the time. So yeah, that's... mm-hmm. Now we're seeing how tough it is for her when she's got to be there for the boring moments.
Yep, for... The pooping parts and the eating parts. So he goes on to say, "You avoided spoilers from the comic book, but how about discussing them at the end? I'm not a comic reader, but would like to hear them. Actually, you started to remedy this in podcast 3. Thanks."
Yeah, I don't really remember too much aside from what I've already said. I should probably go back and read some of those stories just to get reacquainted, because I really did enjoy them back when I was like a teenager or whenever they came out.
I haven't read the comics, but I'm learning more and more, and I'm fascinated with the comic side of things, so I'm hoping to learn more. Maybe we can talk about it some more and we'll find a little part for that.
Yeah, I got to go back, and I think it was in New Mutants, the original stories with David Haller.
Yeah,
I didn't like him at first because he's So, you know, it's kind of like when you see somebody who's just crazy out in the world, and it can be an uncomfortable feeling, right? Like, oh, I better kind of keep my distance from this guy. It was like that reading the comic with David Haller when he
Okay.
first came along. Like, oh, what's up with this dude?
Interesting.
Last email, Catherine in Seattle says, here are two details that I haven't seen mentioned anywhere else. First, during the second time David meets future Sid, she says, you're not like you were before. You're sweet. But right after she says before, she does a tiny, tiny little teeth chatter motion. And there is the tiniest teeth chatter sound that goes along with it. I think that's in episode 10. That maybe he's suggesting that she's infected or something.
In the maze.
Yeah. I think Catherine might have written this before we got this most recent episode. But I think, yeah, she's suggesting that he's. Or she's suggesting that maybe future Sid has some. Maybe she's a carrier. I don't know. Second, and this one I don't really understand, Rima. Maybe you can help me understand what Catherine's getting at. She says, second, when David and the crew are in Melanie's maze, there's a point at which they're all, I think it might be when they're running away from the Minotaur. David says, that was. But I think the last word of his response gets cut off and muted. If you look, his mouth is still moving to finish the word, and the background sound gets completely cut. There isn't even room tone in it. I don't believe that anything in this show is coincidental or sloppy, and I don't think that is either. So I don't know, like it could just be sometimes I think they do stuff just to make the scene seem weirder, like when Sid was in the future room with like Neon with David, and they were kind of little jerky buzz movements every once in a while. It could just be something like that.
Well, this was a difficult scene because I know what she's talking about. I don't know so much about where it was cut and there was no room tone or anything like that. But he did, it wasn't so much that he got cut off. I think it was more of a that was, and it was almost like a like he didn't even know how to finish it because it was David and Ptolemy and Carrie, and they were all facing forward, but their faces were turned back looking at the Minotaur. And he's like, that was, and then Ptolemy, I believe it was hard to tell, said Minotaur, and
Let's get out of here, somebody
Carrie's
said.
like, you know, why was he in a doggy doggy
Oh yeah.
wheelchair?
That's right.
And they were all they're you couldn't see their mouths move. And I watched the show on the second watch. I watch it with the closed captioning on. And during my second watch, it was it, like you, normally they would have like the character's name, whoever's speaking, but this was a scene that they did not have the characters who was saying what attached to it. And I think, you know, I know that there are people like typing that in, and maybe they didn't know either, but I think it was just kind of confusing as well. And I think it just was supposed to play into the confusion of like, what the hell is that thing? Like David's like,
Yeah.
that was, and Sean was like, Minotaur, why is he in a doggy wheelchair?
I
They don't even question why it's there, what it is, but just want to know why it's in
think,
a doggy wheelchair.
yeah, I'm glad they questioned it because that was my question.
Yeah.
She goes, anyway, those were the things I noticed. The sound design in the show is crazy. It's so good and so thoughtful.
She is right, though, that she doesn't believe anything in the show is coincidental or sloppy. That's why I think we probably look at some things, or at least maybe me, I won't speak for everyone, and I look at everything, what does that mean? What does that mean? What
Yeah.
does this symbolize? And what does that mean? Because I feel like there's so much purpose in everything that they do.
See,
So.
I'll be slightly contrarian and say that sometimes I wonder if they don't just say to the whoever's doing the effects, all right, make this scene a little trippy, shake, and then maybe they'll decide to make some little buzzes or things, and it doesn't mean anything other than just something to throw us off balance a little bit.
I agree. I think that they try to find that balance a little bit of throwing something just visually beautiful and maybe confusing to throw us off or make us feel like there's supposed to be purpose when there isn't.
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily think they're trying to throw us off, but as far as making us think something means something when it doesn't, but I'm just saying put little effects in there that are weird just for feel, and it doesn't have anything more meaningful than just a trippy feel, you know?
Right. Totally.
All right, that is our show, episode 12. Thank you for listening, everybody. Hope you're enjoying it. If you want to get in touch, you can email or send a voice message to us at legion@podcastica.com.
You can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And be sure to check out our other shows at podcastica.com. What are you guys doing right now?
We are getting ready on Strange Indeed. We're getting ready to cover Lost in Space on Netflix.
Oh, I thought you said you weren't interested in that one.
I changed my mind.
Okay.
Because I'm a girl and I'm complicated.
It looks pretty cool. Yeah. I thought. Awesome. That's really cool. Well, I'm doing Westworld right now, Westworld Cast. That is a show that could use the podcast much like Legion. And for Legion fans, I've been telling our Westworld listeners they should be watching Legion, and I'll tell you the opposite. You should be watching Westworld because there are two shows that are crazy intelligent and you're not quite sure what's happening sometimes, and they're beautiful to look at, but they're very different too. I think Westworld's a little more grave. It can be funny too, but Legion feels a little more playful, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And they both make you question your reality, or at least mm-hmm. make me question mine.
yeah. So yeah, podcastica.com if you guys want to check those out. All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
We're stuck in here. We got a pull. Don't think about